drop goal!
It's over! They've done it! Evans has done it!
Welcome to Two Woods, Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. Episode 9 of 2023-2024 season. Last week we had special guest Caden Murley. This week you only have myself and my cousin Michael. Normal service is resumed. Mike, 2 days on from that big win. How are you feeling on this Sunday?
I had one of the more relaxing Saturdays of the winter to myself actually yesterday. Hockey was cancelled. So I had a whole Saturday completely to my own.
Is that weather-related?
Weather-related, yeah. Frozen pitch.
Jealous.
Bitterly cold out there.
You're telling me, mate. I had a game. And when I rocked up, the last time I looked at my phone, it was -1 when we went out to warm up.
But then, like, you know, I had all weekend to just sit, chill out, watch the results roll in, knowing that we'd done a job Friday night, 5-point bonus point win.
Yeah.
At home, under the lights, beating the best team in the league.
You watch many of the other games?
I watched a little bit of Northampton Saracens on the train back from Central London. And I will probably put a little bit of Newcastle and Leicester on this afternoon until Newcastle were that far behind in the game and it becomes less interesting. And I've got to find a dodgy stream because it's Brighton-Chelsea this afternoon at 2 o'clock. So I've got to try and find some dodgy stream online to watch that.
Is that not televised?
Nah, it's the West Ham Palace game, unfortunately, which is annoying.
Oh, they need to get PRTV equivalent, don't
they? Maybe. Yeah.
Money in that for the Premier League.
But no, just the weekend, the whole of yesterday was just, it was pleasant. It was so pleasant, you know, you don't have that.
It's been a great feeling.
It's been a great weekend so far. I know, it really has.
I really like a Friday night game because you still get your full weekend. Like,
yeah, you do.
Your Quinn's weekend packed into 3 hours, 4 hours on a Friday night. And Friday night always brings the best atmosphere. And I think that's probably a good place to start because I had an unbelievably good night on Friday night. I'm sure the result was hugely influential within that. But a sellout stoop, a lively stoop, that felt more lively than I think it's been in a long time. Even more lively than the Saracens game, but that's probably because the energy got sapped out of that one fairly quickly.
Yeah, that was tough, wasn't it?
But it was amazing. It was so good. It was good to be sat with all of our mates. It was good to have the drum in there, introduce a couple of new chants. A lot to cheer about, a lot to sing about. And the boys gave us a lot to enjoy as well. That defensive set just before half-time was celebrating like a try. I really, really enjoyed that. And I think the players really appreciated the additional noise that came with Friday night. I think I saw Marcus Smith smiling after that defensive set when the South Stand was going ballistic. Joe Marler turned around, clapped. Will Evans gave it a fist bump. We really were a 16th man. It was amazing. It was so cool to be a part of. I just had such a good time. I don't know if you kind of felt that same feeling in the South Stand specifically, but all around the ground, it felt like we had a point to prove and we had a lot of wrongs to right.
I think after the Saracens game, and you're right, it was so difficult to really sort of charge the atmosphere that night because it got just sapped out of us so quickly. You know, everything we tried, nothing came off and they were just so, so good. It was difficult to, you know, get a feel of what you wanted to you know, really just get any real buzz going. It was almost impossible.
Especially how cold it was on Friday night as well.
Actually. Yeah, but I think that almost, you know,
rallied the troops a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I went for a couple of pints in the patch beforehand, which I actually don't often do.
Yeah.
Especially on a Friday night when I'm racing back from work. But I had a couple of mates come in and I thought, do you know what probably helped as well for the little bit of atmosphere is that it was pretty payday Thursday or Friday for most people. So there were a couple more beers flowing.
It's a huge factor, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was certainly payday for me. So I had a couple of beers on Friday night, knowing that I didn't have anything to do on the Saturday. And then, yeah, mate, it just, like, the buzz around the South Stand, actually, even in the southwest corner beforehand, it was busy.
Yeah.
You know, people were drinking beers, having a good time. And obviously, because everyone's so wrapped up warm, you sort of like knit it all together and, you know, it was really, really good, mate. Really, really cool. One of the best, I mean, we'll talk about the game, obviously, but it was one of the best nights I've had in the South Stand and in the Stoop in probably about a year or so. It was awesome. I loved it.
100%. And before we move on from the raucous Stoop as it was on Friday night, again, another word for the club. I thought they put on an amazing match day for Saracens on the Saturday night. Again, the fireworks, the lights. Dave Rogers on, not just on Stoop Live this week, but on the microphone as well in Mike Bovell's absence. I thought everybody put in a real shift on this match day, and I think it was really well respected by the fans, and the fans fully got behind it. So shout out to the club. It was
one thing on that as well. When the fireworks were going just before kickoff, I was sat there saying, well, do you mind just leaving them on for a second? I'm just going to put my hands out and get the heat going through my fingertips.
Well, it looked like they'd done something different with the pitch, didn't it? I'm sure they had to do that in order to make it playable, but it was covered in sand.
It just looked...
The grass looked very short. And weirdly enough, I mean, I played at Broome Road, Teddington, yesterday.
Yeah.
And as I said, it was about minus one when we kicked off as well. So it was freezing cold, but our pitch was perfect.
Nice really? Long grass.
Yeah, no, not hard at all. I think everybody woke up that morning thinking, wouldn't be terrible if this is called off, would it? But actually, I think in the changing room as well, everybody kind of felt similar to the Friday night in the sense that it is freezing cold, but you either embrace it and get on with it, or you pretty much fold.
Yeah.
And I think we chose to embrace it. We did, unfortunately, lose 24-20 with really frustrating charge down try for them to win it at the end, which is just a killer blow, isn't it? But yeah, good game. Managed to get some meat, mate.
I saw. Are you gonna share that on the pod socials? You're gonna pump up your tires?
No, probably not. It's a bit self indulgent. Or enough for it to be sort of credible. I think if I was to do it now, then people would realise if I didn't post again for another 6 months.
Yeah, maybe.
Us 12s never get many tries. So
no, I think you should do it, mate. That one. Stick some air in.
Esther Hayes and Crash Ball style.
Get out of there.
With the arms. Yeah, now it's good. I'm pleased with it.
I'll tell you what, if people want to see the clip, then drop us a tweet or comment on the Instagram post and we'll put it out. We'll put some air in Will's tyres. He could do with it. He's had a tough few weeks.
I got a couple of head blows as well yesterday. I managed to get a nice clean shot on their number 8. And as I was driving backwards, their supporting player came in to sort of help him out. And as I'm putting him on the floor, my head bashes against his knee on the way down. It wasn't like an impact to the head that was a problem. It was as my head was going down, my neck just gets jolted. Yeah, so I felt like I kind of strained all of my neck muscles on the left-hand side and sort of over to the shoulder. It was awful.
Oh.
Then 2 minutes later, I take another crash ball and their 12 picks me up and pretty much just spear tackles me back on my same left-hand side of my neck. Should have got a yellow, really. It was just a penalty. But yeah, not a great 5 minutes for my physicality.
But you look great, mate. You don't look like you've been hurting too much.
It's because I'm fully covered up. But it was actually because the pitch was so cold. And,
did you go for the skin?
No. If Marcus Smith doesn't wear thermals, neither do I. That's the rule. Absolutely no chance. There's a few lads wearing tights as well. I'm not into that. But,
no, the tights isn't the thing.
Because it was so cold, I feel like your skin becomes a little bit tighter, a little bit more constricted. So any impact you get or any sort of graze you get along the floor really sticks to you. So I've got all these weird kind of grazes, not the kind of thick ones you get in the summertime from hard ground, but like almost like rashes because it's that cold and you get covered in little sort of tiny little cuts and scratches. So I'm sure I'll feel it even more tomorrow, but a good match day. Enjoyed it. Gutted to lose because we really should have won. But we've got another run out before Christmas next week. Christmas jumper social.
Come on.
It's a Saturday as well, which obviously we always play on a Saturday, but the Fat Quins are on a Sunday.
Yeah.
Amazing. I've had a real stroke of luck this season with no real clashes in our schedule. So looking forward to getting another game in next week. Looking forward to Racing. We'll talk about Racing in a little bit more detail later on. We've got some podcast news that
we have got some podcast news that we're absolutely delighted with.
And we don't really try and talk about ourselves too much, but this past week, off the back of the Caden Murley episode, the superstar Caden Murley, who was real good value and someone we've interacted with lots of times. We were so, so lucky to get him on and very, very happy to spend a good hour chatting away with him. He's a really good lad, but he's managed to push us over 100,000 podcast plays. So season 4, episode 9, as you listen to this, we've managed to hit 100,000 plays on the podcast. Might be interesting to some of you, might not be to others, but it feels like a really cool stat for us. So we're pleased to hit that landmark. We're going to be celebrating it this week. And we might even be celebrating it beyond into January time.
We might be, yeah.
As we look to do something quite special around the Cardiff away match day. So stay tuned for a little bit more information next week on that. But 100,000 plays. Thank you for joining us every single week or whenever you can. It's super cool. We absolutely love doing it. And yeah, we love celebrating little wins.
Quite a big number, isn't it? Just gonna raise the bat for 100.
It's quite weird to put it into perspective, isn't it? I mean, there's about 15,000, so we filled that a good few times over.
Yeah, it's
worked out. You might have seen this week I shared our Spotify rap stuff on Instagram stories as well. Some people find it interesting, others might skip through, that's fine. But we've got about 10% of the stoop with us every week, really, haven't we? If we round up the stoop to 15,000, we probably get about 1,500 listeners a week. It's just pretty cool, isn't it? Pretty cool. Nice close-knit Quinn's community, and it's nice to know that we're doing something that people quite like.
Yeah, it's fun, mate. And it's I was also we were doing a little bit like when we played Saracens the week before, and I was sending messages into the group chat for you with the minutes to 3 o'clock Saturday with a kickoff. I was doing that this week. So every time I went on the app that we use and refreshed it, it was like, oh, 485 plays to go. You refresh it again the next day, 300 something to go, 200, 100. And then literally, I think it might have even been Friday afternoon, just before we got down to the stoop, refreshed it again, and we just ticked over 100,000, which is pretty cool. So yeah, Caden was the one to get us there. Not least for getting all the people we've had on, you know, in the last two or three years now. Jesus, there was some... There are some names in there.
I mean, good luck. I thought you were about to try and name them. No, no chance. I think we must have hit double figures at least.
100%, yeah, yeah.
Maybe about 15, 16, 17.
I mean, I'm not going to go through because I'll clearly forget someone, and that would be unkind.
Yeah, it's been amazing though, hasn't it? We've had so many superstars from the men's game, the women's game. We've had retired legends join us. We've had rival fan podcasts join us as well. So if you've got any suggestions or ideas for future guests, they're definitely our best episodes. We enjoy doing the most. I think you enjoy listening to them the most. And it would be cool to do something a bit different. Maybe we'll try and reach out to Joe Marchant or someone now. He's a stud player, and see how he's settling in over there.
But yeah, no, it's really, really cool. And we will head on to talking about Sale in a second. But yeah, like Will just mentioned there, we might be celebrating that just beyond and into January and into Cardiff. So keep an eye out, and we'll bring you more news as it comes.
So from a podcast success to another Quins-related success, London Scottish.
Here we go.
Have been a gripe for me for a very long time. I just can't quite understand how the relationship with Quins is bringing value when they get beaten every single week. However, they have just gone and caused the biggest upset of the season so far in the Championship. Bottom of the table, Scottish have just beaten the table toppers, Ealing Trailfinders, 19-17, with a last-minute try of the game. What a result.
It's
a turning point.
It's funny, isn't it?
Be the turning point. Am I now a Scottish fan? I do not know. But huge hats off to the 12 Harlequins involved. Jack Musk, who scored the winning try. Matas, Brown, Trenholm, Bryn Bradley, Hayden Hyde, and Cameron Anderson in the starting 15. And then we had Els, Hobson, Carr, Zsaltimer, and Slevin on the bench as well.
Star-studded.
It's the turning point.
I don't know. I mean,
is this the most Quins we've had in the squad?
And if I don't know.
Where have they been before? But it feels like that is such a big win. Hopefully it lifts the boys. Hopefully they can kick on from here. And I mean, they copy and pasted us last time we were at home when Amptill beat them and Sarries beat us. We've now beaten the table toppers in the Premiership, and they've now beaten the table toppers in the Championship. So let's kick on from here, up the Scottish.
It is funny though, isn't it? Because we do bag it quite a lot, because the times we do talk about it, and we also want to see how guys...
It's also become a bit of a joke, hasn't it? It's become
funny how it is
just a cut and paste result for them every single week. You don't see any value from it. And it's just one of those things you've got to laugh at yourself, otherwise you cry. But
you're absolutely right. We have at times questioned the value for some of these guys that are dropping down. Look, they're getting rugby. That's brilliant. They're getting game time. That's brilliant. They're match fit. That's brilliant for when we potentially need them to jump up and play Premiership, you know, Prem Cup or even European rugby. So that is a hugely important factor. But ultimately, they have been for the last year or so getting pumped every single week. But no, it's funny.
You lose a certain steeliness as well when you lose every week.
Yeah, and it's you know, I don't know enough about the Championship. I don't watch it every week. Obviously, we check the results, but I don't know enough about some of these sides. And maybe not as much as I should do, but we know that Ealing have been the best, you know, the benchmark in the Championship for a long time. Obviously, they've been desperate to try and get in the Premiership for a while, etc.
littered with ex-Prem players as well. Billy Clark was at 12.
Yeah, and they've just got, you know, and they've got obviously a bit of a, you know, a decent wage bill behind them as well. But to see the boys turn them over at the RAG, which was which was good fun.
Very cool. Very cool. Up the Scottish. Well done, lads. Keep it going. from a win to a loss, and it's, again, almost carbon copy of a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, Harlequins women hosted Saracens at the Stoop on Saturday, just gone. In the Women's Premiership, it was a heavy 31-0 defeat. Mm. Very much similar to the men's side a couple of weeks ago. That's now played 3-1-1 in the opening game and then lost the last two against Sail Away and Saracens at home. Not easy fixtures. But we look to bounce back, and it's a long season. They're a little behind the rest of the rugby schedule, so that's fine. We won't panic yet, but 31-0 is slightly concerning, isn't it, mate?
A little bit. And I suppose, I mean, it's difficult, isn't it? Because Saracens are, I mean, they are Saracens. They've been the benchmark for a long, long time. Obviously, Gloucester Hartbury are probably still the form side and the team to beat in the Women's Premiership this year. But yeah, there were 1,500 tickets sold, I think, at the Stoop on Saturday afternoon. So plenty of people going down and watching, which is amazing. And we've got Exeter at home in the next round. So we'll see. And obviously, there's a little bit of disruption because on the 16th, we were due to play Worcester Warriors away. That's obviously not happening. And then up until up to the big doubleheader, Gloucester Hartbury at the big Stoop and the doubleheader at big game. But yeah, there'll be a little bit of disruption leading up to that. So hopefully we get a result against Exeter Women next weekend and bounce back and make it 2-2. And then after the big game, it'll be, you know, 4-2 and we'll be flying.
Absolutely. Well, let's move it on. Let's talk about Friday night. It's what we've been waiting to do this entire episode. 36-3. Led from start to finish. Not a single try conceded. I can't remember the last time we didn't concede a try, particularly against a powerhouse like Sale. They were missing a few stars in sort of the likes of Manu Tuilagi, but and Tom Curry as well. Yeah, but overall, they were fairly well positioned to have a good go at us. George Ford versus Marcus Smith was an interesting subplot.
Yeah.
But Friday night in the cold, it suited them, didn't it?
Well, there was a couple more interesting subplots I had as well, because Raffy Quirk was back off the bench. And obviously, you know, we had spoken about what Sale were going to, you know, theoretically do and their usual game style. You know, Warren Ford kick a lot. They kick tactically. They kick, you know, to turn lads in behind. They're going to, you know, then use the big lads like, you know, your likes of Johnny Hills, your Cobras Visas, you know, your Dupreez, all those sort of boys to beat you up top. But we just seem to find a way. And actually, some of our selections were quite interesting as well. See, Luke Cowan-Dickey, you know, the former England man starting at hooker for us. But obviously, Jack Walker wasn't in the side for us. They obviously went with Sam Riley and Nathan Djibouli. We don't know if that was injury or just, you know, tactically or whether...
It was tactically.
I mean, I didn't see anything, you know, untoward with
Walker. Walker was on the pitch after the game, I think.
Yeah, so maybe it was just a kick up the arse for Wacker in any sort of sense. And obviously he's had a long period of time without rugby, being away with England and, you know, just spending a lot of time rehabbing. And I'm sure that he would have been desperate to get on the pitch during that World Cup. And it didn't obviously turn out that way for him. But, you know, 6, 7, 8 weeks of lots and lots of training and holding tackle bags for lads and running sort of stuff and line outs and scrums and all that goes with it. Just finding a little bit of form and a little bit of, you know, match readiness probably has taken its toll on him, and it didn't quite work out in the last couple of weeks. And
yeah, and
Sam Riley had started the season brilliantly, hadn't he?
Yeah, and it's definitely worth talking about that a little bit more as well, because not only was he there in an elite sporting environment going through his paces, which is absolutely brilliant, but it meant he was away from us. And you bring in Danny Wilson, a new kind of lead to our coaching setup, who is influential in obviously everything line out. He's coming in cold a little bit, believe it or not. He's been away training for 8 weeks flat out when the rest of the lads have been on holiday, but he's actually coming in cold because he's not been part of all the preseason. So it's tricky for him. But Sam Riley, it's not his breakthrough year this year. He did break last year, but he's brilliant.
He's playing well, isn't he?
He's got a dynamite step on him. He's controlling the back of the maul. He scored again on Friday night.
He's scoring tries, isn't he? Yeah.
And I know
the lineout has operated fairly smoothly when he's been on the park.
It's been solid. And I mean, I don't think that's down to Riley being better at lineouts than Walker. I think it's down to the preseason.
Absolutely will be.
And obviously Gibbs off the bench has also been part of that environment from start to finish. And he's been brilliant as well. The impact he makes off the bench, he's powerful. He makes good decisions. He's skillful. And I would put my neck on the line here and say I do think Wacker has dropped down the pecking order. Not through any fault of his own. It's just huge competition. And Sam Ryan has been excellent. And Jibs has been brilliant. And even Steph's tipping Jibs to be the young player of the year.
Yeah. I think you're dropping down the pecking order is a funny way of putting it. But I know what you mean. It's just form. Like form is tough at the minute. And we've spoken about it a lot in terms of, you know, it's a short season. It's difficult.
You can't afford to be off form, can you?
You can't afford to have a couple of poor weeks, especially having lost the last couple of weeks on the trot. You know, it's tough, but we'll move on to a little bit more selection chat because there was an interesting graphic that we put together about the back row during the week.
Yeah.
And,
yes,
you know, we said, oh, are we going to go, you know, against the physical side like Sella, are we going to look to go with power? Are we going to look to go with balance? Are we going to try and, you know, outwork them? And there was a little bit of a combination of the three because Dom Brandt and Will Evans are obviously, you know, they are nailed on 7 and 8. So the sixth position was sort of up for grabs. Obviously, George Hammond was not in the squad this week, so Dino Lamb moved back into the row.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we're going to see Steph back in the not-too-distant future. We saw Ernie get a little bit of time there, who was back on the bench this weekend as well. So the sixth slot was sort of up for grabs. And I was an advocate after Chandler Cunningham's impact off the bench away at Northampton. And he got the go at six, which is a big vote of confidence because as we have sort of chatted amongst ourselves together and externally, he's young and he's raw, but the boy's got some serious promise. And I thought he was excellent on Friday night. And we'll talk about it again a little bit more, but that was interesting.
He was voted fans player of the match as well.
Yeah.
So Marcus Smith was given the TNT sports man of the match, but then the fan poll that Harlequins do, trying to call himself man of the match. One thing that really impressed me was almost his temperament because he got pushed and bullied around a little bit by Johnny Hill in that scuffle. Yeah. He just got on with it.
I was about to say there's a couple of
play a bit of rugby and I'm going to smash you up. And then a couple minutes later we go and score. He gives it full beans to the south stand. Exactly what I want to see from him. Exactly.
100%. Yeah. And like I said, there was going to be that, you know, little controversial moment to talk about. And, you know, we put a tweet out saying that maybe Johnny Hill will see further repercussion in the post game, but we'll see how that pans out. We'll talk about it again in a little bit. And then the last one I thought was very interesting was the fact that Nick David has been back to the wing at the expense of Lewis Lyon. Again, we don't think that's an injury. We think that is a tactical decision.
Do you? I thought Lewis had a little knock.
Oh, maybe then. There we go. We're not 100% sure. What I do know is that it was Lewis's birthday today. As we're sitting here on Sunday, I saw that it was his birthday today. So happy birthday, Lewis. Thanks for being the first ever senior men's player to come on the pod. You know, push us towards that 100,000 plays.
Yeah.
But I thought whether it was tactical or injury enforced, I actually think it's a change I completely agree with because you've effectively got two fullbacks by trade playing in your back three against a side who we know are going to kick, you know, a lot.
Yeah, smart.
So
yeah,
I think it was 100% the right decision. So, yeah, in terms of selection, I think I'm looking at it in a really, really positive and keen manner at Thursday lunchtime while I'm checking my phone and seeing what happens. Unfortunately, then, we did lose Will Collier in the warm-up. So that was a little bit of a shame, having missed the weekend before at Northampton, losing him in the warm-up. So Dylan Lewis went to three and Lovejoy Chawatama moved on to the bench. But even then, 50-cap international, Dylan Lewis. So we're not losing too much.
No, yeah. And just to summarise all of that as well, I think the back row chat, I think we didn't really know who we wanted in the
back.
The three choices we put up, I think it was quite fun just to provoke a bit of conversation. But it was always going to be, if Hammond's out, then Dino goes in the row and then that six shirt's up for grabs. If not, I think I probably would have stuck with Dino six, Webb seven, Dom is eight and kept Hammond in the row because he's been awesome. But I think he's probably picked up that shoulder injury from Saints and needs a bit of time off. But no complaints. And I think Charlie Cunningham himself claimed that six shirt in one match day.
Yeah.
So fair play to him. Interesting what you do going into Europe because I don't know how we're playing Europe as a kind of strategy yet, whether it's rotate for the away games, win the home games, whether it's just go from the off and see how we get on. Who knows how we're going to play it, but maybe he'll get another start at six because he's not had too many minutes, so he won't need a rest or anything yet. And then, yeah, what you said about Nick David, I hadn't even thought about. That's a stroke of genius, isn't it? Put two fullbacks on. I think you put them in the right places. Tyrone Green's always our starting fullback. And he was a little bit off form at the start of season. He's played his way into form, moved back to his home position of fullback. And I think you keep him there and Nick David comes in on the wing. And I thought he had a good game as well, actually, Nick David. So I don't think there was many Quins players that had a bad game. But
no,
if we move into the opening phases, it was that man, Tyrone Green, that got us on the scoreboard. I don't think we fired too many shots within those opening phases. It's just Sale were completely off the boil. Lots of mistakes from them, and none more costly than Joe Carpenter getting peppered with kicks all night, which we said was going to be hard for the fullbacks. He just sort of lets it loose after the tackle, and Green tidies up and dives over.
The signs were there early doors, weren't they, about how we were going to play. We were going to be smart with our kicking. We weren't just going to go, you know, full Quins on them. We were going to be a little bit more pragmatic. There was a kick in behind not too long before that mistake by Carpenter that Gus War ended up tidying up, and there was a little bit of a funny bounce of the ball, and it was just sort of holding up before it went over the try line. War picked it up and tried to run his way out of trouble, and it almost, you know, ran himself right into a mess. So the writing was on the wall there about how we were going to just look to play in the right areas. We were going to kick it in behind. We were going to do plenty of kick chasing. We were going to try and, you know, turn them into their own half, and that try came completely from that, kicking behind. Carpenter doesn't deal with it. Ball spills out the back and Tyrone Green pounces on it.
And Danny Wilson even said it in his post-match interview. We had a different game plan against Sale. And you could see that. We played in a slightly different way. And we were clinical. We really were clinical. You've got to take your chances. Yes, they're making mistakes. But unless you deal with them, it means absolutely nothing. So that was a nice little gimme to get us on the board. And then we get our tails up, don't we? We look like we start to get into the game a bit more.
A little bit, but, you know, we took that penalty on the 20th minute, which is, you know, 7-0 up. We were, I'd say, dominant in the game at that point. We could have quite easily, and previously we would have done, you know, gone for the corner and tried to stick it, you know, in the...
I think we even said this to each other in real time. Like, I would have taken three. I think you were sort of... It never sits right with you, does it, mate?
I know. I'm still mentally, we do it all the time, and we kick for the corner at every opportunity. So
again, yeah. It's evidence of Danny Wilson's slightly different game plan for this.
I think so, yeah. But the penalty comes, and then we have, you know, a 10-15 minute spell where the game doesn't really move on in terms of the scoreboard, but 5 minutes before half time is when the real turning point of the game, I think, happens. How good.
Huge. But I mean, Stuart Hogg, who was on sort of punditry for this one for TNT, even said that after the game, when he was speaking to Billy Millard, it felt like the first half was where we really earned the right to win the game.
100%, yeah.
100%. Whilst it was a close contest on the scoreboard, I think it was 10-3 at half time, wasn't it? Whilst it was that tight in a one score game, they hadn't fired a shot. When they had, they were dealt with.
They were repelled.
Dealt with convincingly as well. Yeah. And that defensive set just before half time, where I think it was about 16, 17 phases.
I watched it back. I think I counted 17, yeah.
Okay. I think I read somewhere it was 16, and I think six of them were literally on our own line, which is absurd.
Maybe I've chucked one in there just to inflate the stat count.
I mean, maybe there was. But when you include the likes of Luke Cowan-Dickie, who is known for scoring from close range within those phases, that was some remarkable defence. And
awesome.
You could feel us growing and growing and growing with every single tackle that was made. Slowly, people are starting to get on their feet in the south stand as it goes on and on and on until it kind of ends up like an eruption of a try. And they get the penalty from it. And we're thinking, okay, we've emptied the tank a lot there. They could probably go for the corner if they wanted.
Probably could have done it
all over again. And we're thinking, oh, God, we've done it once. Can we do it again? No, psychological blow given.
Yeah.
They take the points. Huge. At that point, they've almost conceded.
There was one tackle in that set of...
Is it Joe Marler?
It was Marler and Riley, wasn't it? Where... I don't know who the Sale player was, but he just got his body height a little bit wrong. Wasn't quite, you know, as low and diving at the ankles as you're sort of supposed to in those situations. Just got his body height a little bit wrong. I think Riley got underneath the ball. Marler follows over with the supporting tackle, and they go back 3 or 4 yards, and you can just feel it. You can feel it lift. Yeah. It was amazing.
Well, and not long after that, there's another one from Marler, probably about 10 meters out at this point.
Big hit, wasn't it?
Just creams Ben Cup and actually knocks him backwards, which I've never seen in kind of a 1v1 challenge like that when you're defending your line.
Oh,
just creams him backwards. It was perfect. And I really enjoyed that face.
I absolutely loved it.
I enjoyed that more than any of the tries.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And as
if
you
that's
said,
Danny Wilson's imprint on this team, then
brilliant.
Give me more of it.
And
maybe
as you said,
a testament to Jerry Flannery as well, who's now
100%.
Full season of focusing solely on defence, and we didn't concede a try.
And you said at the top of the episode, if we'd have turned the ball over, obviously it came to a penalty and they took the three, which for us, we were sitting there going, absolutely, lads, take the three, you'll need them. If we'd have turned the ball over at that point, or, you know, won a penalty for them going off their feet or a knock-on, we would have celebrated that like a try. It was unreal. It was so, so good. It was one of the best defensive sets I've seen in a long time. And that was where, right, and just bear with me for a little bit, that was where I fully felt the effect of the noise that we have in the South.
Yeah.
Because it was then going, right before halftime, there's four or five minutes of play and everyone is on their feet. Like, usually we're all sitting and we're cheering. Everyone was on their feet. Every time there was a tackle, yes, driving back. Yes, another one. Yes, blocking him off. Then they take the three and we scream them off into the tunnel at half time.
Yeah.
Knowing that they're coming to our second half. And here we go. Mate, it was awesome. It was so good.
So they take three and then we hit the sheds, come back out within a minute and a half. Marcus Smith has sliced them up, gone straight through, left Gus War stuck in the mud, quite literally could not move. Does him with the step and then puts Danny away under the posts. Most people hadn't got back to their seats at that point. And actually, maybe this is one gripe I have. They've put those kind of Portaloo-style toilets at the back of the South Stand, which is supposed to help alleviate a bit of the queue time.
Yeah.
Queues were ridiculous.
The toilet queues were a tricky art.
Because the game was so good. Normally, you get people to sneak off sort of 3 or 4 minutes before the break so they can get back in time or beat the queues. But no one wanted to go because we had that defensive set.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, everyone's missing the first 1 or 2 minutes of the second half. Fortunately, I wasn't one of those people. And I got to see a bit of magic from the magic man who then put Danny Kerr underneath the sticks.
I wasn't even sure Danny was going to get there because the tackle comes in and then he sort of, the momentum of the tackle sort of rolls him and carries him over the line.
Yeah, getting there. It was just whether he could get there on his front as opposed to his back.
That's a good way of putting it, actually. But then the classic Danny Kerr, you know, point to the South Stand and throw the ball in with a big smile on his face.
He booted it, didn't he? Yeah.
You know, I just think at that point, you think, God, you know what? We're on it and we're in the game and we're looking good.
Well, and within 5 minutes of rugby playing time, we've dealt two huge psychological blows with keeping them out at the end of the first and then scoring it early in the second. That's the momentum shift for me. That 5 minute window of rugby playing time is where the game was won.
Should we talk about Sam Riley's try and the preamble before the try?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really know where that all came from. I just saw Cunningham South get up, bumped into a couple of them as he was kind of trying to refine his balance and get out of the melee of Sharks players around him. Johnny Hill didn't take kindly to it, comes and sort of puts him in a headlock, throws him over the barricade, and then a melee rolls out.
It was
bizarre.
It's always because you don't really see that much more, do you? Players are so cautious of where their hands are and, you know, the physicality that they're, you know, physicality is not the right word because it's off the ball. It's not part of the game, but players are so cautious.
It wasn't a proper scrap, was it? But it was a mass.
I mean, no one's throwing hands, but you know, people are very, very cautious of it. And obviously everyone's watching it and, you know, for right or wrong, we're sitting there and for right or wrong, we're thinking, well, I hope one of the cell players has got this really badly wrong and has put his hand somewhere they shouldn't. And then there's going to be some sort of, you know, repercussion. But the yellow card actually did come a couple of minutes before that. It was Aaron Reed. Absolutely no complaints. It's a 2-on-1 going into the corner.
Stonewall yellow.
And it's not one of those ones where it looks like he's going for the ball or trying to knock it up to himself to then gather. He just throws a hand out. Ball goes straight to the deck.
It wasn't even close to catch. I'm surprised it took so long to give the yellow to be honest.
Clear cut.
Sorry, just before we move on, mate, again, the crowd was such fun.
Yeah, it was.
Everyone was chanting off. It was very pantomime. Some people might not like that. I don't know exactly how I feel about it. But one thing I do love is just the mass crowd participation. It was good fun. And everyone was right.
Yeah. And then Sam Riley, obviously, from the resulting penalty, and the referee, Ramos, does actually have a word with Johnny Hill, and it is only a penalty, arguably could have been yellow, because that image of him...
It's a yellow for more than one reason. A little brawl is fine, a little scuffle is fine, but to forcibly push somebody over the barricade is quite dangerous onto the concrete. Plus, those barricades have got all sorts of screws and stuff in them, so it's a stupid thing to do. He probably got lucky in that sense, but then to have him on the concrete floor with his forearm on his throat for as long as he did, just leaning his weight into it, that was dirty. That's not cool.
It's not a great angle for Johnny Hill, is it? But there is
terrible. And all the kids in that stand watching that right in front of them is like, what are you trying to do here? What are you trying to achieve, Johnny Hill? Because I know you're frustrated, you're getting beat up. But that was just what was it for? But the best thing about it for me, and sorry, I'm going to go on about it.
No, go on.
Cunningham South, just completely unbothered.
Yeah.
Completely unbothered. It was so cool. He was like, I don't care how big you are. I'm just as big. You can try and rile me up if you want. I'm just going to get on playing rugby and we're going to beat you on the pitch. And yes, we beat them well.
Yeah. And there's a very sweet moment of sort of response for Johnny Hill later in the game, which is brilliant. But the actual try again comes from a driving maul, doesn't it? You know, it's operated well for us. Sam Riley's been the recipient of two or three of them. And again, the drive comes and Riley just peels off, finds a gap, throws himself over the line. And one of my favourite moments of that is that as Riley breaks free from the maul, Domers knows what's going to happen. So Domers almost runs past it before Riley's even put the ball down and is giving it beans to the fans. Riley gives it beans. All the boys pile over on top of them because they've seen the effect of that little, you know, melee. The card hasn't come, but I think the players at that point maybe feel, lads, we've got them here. We've just got to keep doing what we're doing. You know, stick to the process, stick to what we're trying to achieve here. The try then comes. I don't know how best to describe it, but I think you can tell what I'm trying to say. It was just brilliant. But the reward that comes from it was just so, so good. And then the next try is, it's just a bit of magic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, just like I said actually to one of my mates at heart, before the game, I was sitting and chatting in the South Stand, and one of them said to me, how are we gonna win the game? And one of the things I said was that if they don't kick well, which is one of their strong suits, you know, Warren Ford do kick the ball brilliantly in smart areas. If they do get their kick wrong and they don't apply their kick chase perfectly, that's where we might have some leverage in the game because we've got the classic Quinn sort of throw the ball around pace and they got it wrong. And it was two or three boys down the left-hand side. It goes through Marcus. It goes through Caden. It finishes in the hands of Will Joseph. And we've gone 60 metres from a poor kick and a poor chase. And, you know, suddenly we're going, bloody hell, we're three tries in the clear here. And Sale haven't really, you know, got themselves in the game post-half time.
Warren Ford sounds like it should be a movie title or an album for Bon Jovi or something, don't you think?
So it sounds like an estate agent to me.
They played like estate agents, didn't they?
That try was awesome. And that was, the space is there and we just take it. And it's Marcus, it's Tyrone, it's Caden, it's back inside to Will Joseph. And at that point,
slick is what it is. It's slick. Incredibly slick. It's Quinn's at their best. And it reminds me of Joe Marchant scoring tries like that against Montpellier or whoever in Europe. It always seems to be the 13 that gets on the end of those as we kind of leverage our back three to kind of cut through, and it's the support runner of the 13 that always finishes it off. And very, very nice to see Will Joseph score not one but two tries, and he looks more and more at home in that 13 shirt. He slotted in perfectly.
Loads of confidence to him as well, being on the end of those two. And the second one,
Well, the second one's brilliant.
The
Can
second
we
talk
one, about that one now because it's Johnny Hill's karma right here, right? Bumped by Will Joseph, but then on the way down, and the second replay of this is brilliant because it's on one of those 8K cameras, super slow motion. You've got Johnny Hill falling back, slowly, slowly hitting the deck, but watching Will Joseph dive over into the corner, it's absolutely perfect. Having just been bumped by him, great piece of skill from him to get his body positioning and his weight right to be able to bump a second row, but then finish it in the corner under pressure from another player as well. It is poetry in motion. You're absolutely right. And it's a beautiful piece of karma that we should probably try and mock up into some kind of edit and just put it out on socials for everybody to enjoy.
And I know we've bagged Johnny Hill a little bit in this episode. And for me, it's rightly so because...
Yeah, 100%.
He also was the guy that got yellow cards in the final in 21 for Exeter, wasn't he? So he's... He was the one that penalty
one of them did, but the one I remember more so is Marcus's.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Do you remember
I can't believe we managed to win that game with Marcus Smith in the bin for 10 minutes, but there you go.
Penalty try in the first 5 minutes, and it was Johnny Hill that brought it down right in that corner, and we go under the sticks and score.
Yeah, I remember the penalty try,
brilliant. But that was Johnny Hill then, it was Johnny Hill now, and it was very, 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 very funny indeed. And then, you know, the last 10 minutes, a sort of whatever they are, you know, 36-3 up. The game has been won f***ing well, and it was so much fun. It was so good. One of the best performances I think I've watched at home, and we bounced back well against Northampton, but we shot ourselves in the foot two or three times. We did not give them any reason on Friday night to even consider parity in the game. They probably got the best of us at scrum time, but everywhere else on the park, we were superb. We were so, so good, and it was the result we needed to finish the first block of the Premiership We've obviously now got two big weeks in Europe coming up, and we've got a massive away game in the Premiership pre-Christmas and pre-big game down in Bath. But to finish that block of Premiership rugby, and also, you know, Saracens losing yesterday as well, which is, you know, massive. That doesn't happen often down at the Stonex. And, you know, Bath are marching on. They are looking strong. So to finish that in that manner and with that scoreline and with that performance was so, so, so good.
Shawshark Redemption.
Shawshark Redemption, yeah.
Sinking of the Sharks. Yeah. It went a long way to correcting the previous 2 weeks, didn't it? And Joe Marler gave an interview, I think during game actually, saying how watching as a fan last week, because it was his rest week, 2 points away at the Saints, they were fairly pleased with. But actually, it was one that got away from us for our own undoing. So it's frustrating. And then Saracens is, yeah, one of those unforgivable ones that you didn't fire a shot. So redemption is close. We've come a long way. That performance alone has really instilled a lot of confidence back into the fans. And we know we're never far off. You're never as bad as you think you are, and you're never as good as you think you are. And this league is so competitive. That now leaves us third in the table going into the European games. But I'm not looking at the numbers on the left. I'm looking at the numbers on the right. We have 26 points. You've got Sale and Bath ahead of us on 27 points. You've then got teams below us on, what is it, 25 and 20.
Saracen's 25, Northampton 25, Exeter 23.
There you go. It's so close. And it changes week on week. So you've just got to keep backing it up. You've just got to keep winning. We play Bath next in the Premiership after two rounds of Europe, Racing away and Toulouse at home. Bath have got Cardiff away the week before our game. We've got Toulouse at home. So I think that benefits us ever so slightly, albeit I think Toulouse will be tougher opposition than Cardiff. It's a must win. They're all must wins. And I think we can take a lot of confidence from this weekend's game into that one. We'll finish up with some three-word reviews. The first one I've got here is a brilliant one from Chris Phillips. It's a photo of him with his son. It says, Henry's first Friday. And it's a lovely little selfie.
Brilliant.
Beaming smiles. We need Henry there every Friday. He's a lucky charm. Friends of the Stoop have said, who needs heating? I completely agree. I think we brought the heat ourselves, didn't we?
Yeah.
Andy Miller, 5-point win. Leo Adolf, Sharks left frozen. A few from Bej. Tyrone is back. Marcus is back. DC never left. Paul Edwards, first half defence. That was, again, we've said it lots of times in this episode. That, for me, was the highlight of the game.
I've got a couple here which I quite like. This is from Henry Hollis Brown. It's just Chandler Cunningham South.
Yeah,
which is no really, words really needed. Good. Really, really good. There's a couple of memes that are coming here for anyone that's ever watched The Hangover, the first one. It's when they get Doug back. It's, we are back, we are back. back to business.
Yeah, there's loads, isn't there? I really like them this week. Of course we do, because we've just absolutely pumped them. Dan Gollop says, Allez Le Quins as we go on to Paris.
Yeah.
Mike King says, goose-stepping Filipino. It was nice to hear that ring out.
It was nice to hear that.
Friday night. We need to bring that one to the forefront a little bit more. Andy in Banstead says class is permanent, and I think that's probably one we need to keep reminding ourselves.
Yeah,
team little bit class.
We're a good side.
We're a very good side. The trouble is, there's a lot of good sides in the league, but you're never far away from losing. You're never far away from winning. So you just got to keep believing and stick at it.
Let's do then a very, very quick little look into Europe. Racing away on the Sunday night. We are not going to be there, unfortunately. What do you think we are looking to achieve then in this next little two-week block of Europe? Because we've got Racing on the Sunday, and then we double up again on the Sunday at home to Toulouse in a couple of weeks' time. What are you thinking?
It's hard, isn't it? I think it's a good benchmark of where we actually are. We know the top 14 is effectively the Premier League of rugby. It's the benchmark. It's where all the best players want to go. It's where a lot of the best teams are. Everybody seems to be beating everybody. I think Racing beat La Rochelle fairly comfortably a couple of weeks ago. They just lost to Clermont away this weekend, albeit they didn't put out the likes of Khaleesi and Arundel and a few others. I don't think Fiku was involved. So the French teams always play it a bit funny. I think they always kind of rotate for the away games and go full whack for the home games. which makes it tricky for, does it make it tricky for us, or do we just discard all that information and just do our own thing? I don't know.
I think well, like you said at the top, you know, it's a dangerous game resting and rotating players, because obviously we want to get through Europe. We've got a good chance of getting through Europe. You know, we've got, you know, let's be fair, Cardiff away, it should be a win. Then we've got two good sides at home in Ulster and Toulouse, but at home in front of our fans, you know, we back ourselves against almost anybody.
Well, we've just seen it on Friday night, haven't we? You wouldn't
exactly
have 33 points as a win for Quins over Sale, would you? But
exactly. So
we put that in the locker.
I think Racing is going to be the really tough one. So I think, you know, we go to Racing with, you know, as good a side as we can put out. We almost beat them there last year. There's no reason why we can't.
Agree.
Maybe you rip up the script a little bit with league form and what happens in Europe. I don't think you need to pay too much attention to it. They've also lost three games this year, Racing. You know, they've played 1-6, lost three. They're beatable. You know, they've lost games.
They're up the top though, aren't they? I think they're second.
No, they're top. Toulon a second, Castra weirdly a third. I thought they were terrible.
Well, that's the thing with the top 14. Yeah. It changes every year, doesn't it? They're all so sort of hard to predict. But I think I'm with you, mate. It's hard because it is the first game. We've got to go all guns blazing.
Just go and try and win the game, don't you?
The rotation point is interesting because rotation, I think, comes with a bit of a negative connotation. Like, you feel like you're resting your best players, but the depth's the best we've ever had. And actually, you don't lose much ability when you bring in one player for another. I think we saw it with Dylan Lewis coming in for Collier. Like, you don't lose anything. You've got a 50-cap Wales international there. So rotating doesn't necessarily mean a negative thing in my eyes. I think Chandler goes at six again. He's not that many minutes, and I think he earned his shirt, and I think he would relish that opportunity against Khaleesi.
I was just about to say that there are some of the lads in the squad who are going to be absolutely chomping at the bit to get stuck into some high-class European rugby. Like, Chandler Cunningham-South and Will Joseph having come over from London Irish. These are the games that they want to play in when you sign for Quins.
Well, and they're up against Khaleesi and Fiku.
Absolutely. Joe Launchbury, who's been, you know, out of the European picture for a couple of years, having been in Japan and here and everywhere, he'll be absolutely like itching to get back into
European
rugby.
Just had his rest week as well.
Just had his rest week. He'll be good to go. I think Ernie might get a go in the second row, because I know that Dino's played a lot at six, and obviously in the second row this week. So I wonder whether we might see Ernie.
And a World Cup as well.
And a World Cup. So yeah, he might
go after Dino.
Absolutely. But Marlon's just had a rest week. Obviously, Dylan Lewis is playing a bit more rugby in Collier's absence, but he should be relatively fresh. Mate, we'll see. We will see. But like you say, there's depth there. Where if Will Porter starts, that's not a bad thing. We know how good he is. Marcus is going to play.
Yeah, there's not too much rotation you can do with the backs, is there? I think we're probably lacking our depth there just through injury. But
with the likes of Northmore out, maybe.
Maybe bring Liner back in. Yeah. Maybe you do start Porter, but actually Danny was rested not too long ago and he had a couple of games off the bench. So maybe you bring them both and give them both a half. I don't know.
We'll see. We'll see. But look, we'll leave it there because there's so much to look forward to this weekend. Have a safe and wonderful trip, those of you that are going. We're very, very jealous, but we are looking forward to seeing everyone back at the Stoop in a couple of weeks on Sunday afternoon against Toulouse. The Christmas period is upon us. There's loads of rugby. It's going to be busy. It's going to be fun. And we're looking forward to it. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
We march on. Come on, the Quins.
Come on, the Quins.